Salvation by grace through faith, the Christological meaning of marriage, the resplendent armor of God. These are some of the themes that you'll find in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June, the New Concordia Commentary on Ephesians. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or you can read an excerpt of the Concordia Commentary on Ephesians at issuesetc.org, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, the Concordia Commentary on Ephesians.
It upsets me when I hear some of what's said in our political debates right now. But more than that, it really hits at my heart. I wonder, you know, did they not go and hear the same lessons I did in Sunday school?
Having a foundation in faith that is certain allows one to have a much more searching skepticism of any of the theories proposed by the mind of man.
We rejoice in suffering not because, hey, it feels good. It feels terrible. It feels awful. The joy comes from knowing God's presence in our suffering, and then we rely not on ourselves, but on the God who raises the dead.
Northern Illinois Chainsaw Drivers, love, Issues, etc.
There are some things that are so much a part of our culture that we don't even notice them, like a fish swimming in a fishbowl. If you asked a goldfish, what's water, he'd say, what's water? He wouldn't know what it is. And multiculturalism is one of those things. In the 21st century, especially in a postmodern America, we don't even recognize it when we see it any longer because it is so much a part of our culture, multiculturalism. Now, it sounds like a good thing, doesn't it? You picture children learning about Native Americans or other cultures in school, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. That's just sociology. But multiculturalism has a dark side as well. In fact, a menacing dark side. We're going to be talking about it here in the first hour of Issues Etc., coming to you live from the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference from Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. Alvin Schmidt will be our guest for the first hour of the program, and then in the second hour, Craig Parton joins us. We're going to talk about recovering evangelicals. We hear from these people all the time. What does it mean to be a recovering evangelical? Craig Parton spent 7 years as a speaker for Campus Crusade for Christ, and he's author of the book newly printed, reprinted in its second edition, The Defense Never Rests. That's hour two of Issues Etc. Now, you can join us as we go into these 2 hours, a live broadcast that kicks off the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Give us a call, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email right here in the studio. Even though we're not in the studio, we'll still get it in real time, and we can answer it. Talkback at issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at issuesetc. And since we have a live audience, we do also have a live audience mic sitting right there in front of the dais. And when the time comes for questions or comments, feel free to come up and form a line for questions and comments for our speakers during these 2 hours of Issues Etc. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is a regular guest. He's a longtime guest of Issues Etc. I would say he's probably one of the foremost authorities on multiculturalism. He's been studying it for the better part of 20 years and more. He's professor emeritus of sociology at Illinois College, and he's author of the book, The Menace of Multiculturalism. Al, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you.
I'm sure you've heard this in all the time you've spoken and taught on this. Someone says, Western civilization is a superior civilization. And often the response to that will be, well, that's just arrogant. That's imperialistic. How would you respond to that?
First of all, I would say it's essentially true, even though they don't want to believe it. Because all other cultures try to imitate the Western culture. Multiculturalism, of course, despises the fact that the Western culture is superior and has done for the world what it has done. It seeks to destroy it. And I might also mention, when I first did the research on this book in the early 90s, it was published in 97, so it's been out for 18 years, most people really still had not heard about multiculturalism. In fact, I had to define in the book what political correctness is. Today, everybody knows what it is. Back then, nobody really knew what it was. It was a brand new concept with a brand new meaning. But I also want to pick up in terms of, you mentioned what's wrong with learning about other cultures? Well, first of all, that's not multiculturalism. Don't forget, there is an ism in multiculturalism, which means it's an ideology. It's not an educational method to inform and liberate the mind. I'm all for multicultural education. I always have been. That's one reason I have loved foreign languages. Because when you learn another language, you invariably learn something about another culture. Well, in our day and age, in spite of the fact that we're pushing so-called multiculturalism, we despise foreign languages. The average college student today doesn't know any foreign language. They don't even know their own, really, to speak of anymore. They don't know a verb from a noun, and so on and so forth. Again, in many ways, subtracting or minimizing the whole contribution that Western culture has made and done. So multiculturalism is very different than multicultural education. And that's one of the things that is obfuscated, is never clarified to the public. So when they hear multiculturalism, they think of multicultural education, and they have been deceived, misled, because that's not it at all. And I don't know how many, well, that point is simply not made. In fact, I think many times the media people don't know it themselves. So it's not arrogant to say that Western culture is superior. Obviously, Western culture had a lot of flaws. It wasn't perfect by any means because culture is largely man-made. But if you look and compare Western culture over the span of history, from the time of, 2,000, 3,000 years before the birth of Christ. You don't see, for example, what you see now. You look at all the advances that have been brought. One of the common phrases that multiculturalists like to say, all cultures are equal, are not equal. They're simply, they are equal. And I say, oh, really? You mean the American Indian smoke signal is equivalent to an iPad or an iPhone in terms of communication? Or, for example, that the bow and arrow was equivalent of the carbine rifle that took up, or the horse, which the American Indians didn't have until the days after Columbus? No, and they quickly opted for these other ways of dealing with their culture, making a livelihood and the like, because these were methods were superior. Where did they come from? Western culture. And I could go on that particular vein in more ways than one. So when they say all cultures are equal, it's simply not true. For example, is the culture of the Aztec Indians, for example, where you took people up a pyramid and then slaughtered them, and worship the hearts, etc., and whatnot, all equivalent to, for example, where this is a major crime in Western society, still is, oddly enough. There aren't too many of Western laws anymore that are intact, but that's still one of them. And one can go on citing all kinds of examples that Western culture indeed was superior in terms of the actual mechanisms of making a livelihood and being comfortable in life as a whole. Western culture was far superior. And of course, multiculturalism wants to destroy that. One of the things I might mention, that part of multiculturalism is to destroy, that's its objective, Western culture. Together with that, let's not forget, destroy Christianity as well. This is why you see the unrelenting attack today on Christianity. And you can't attack another religion, but Christianity is fair game, on the media even today. And, for example, I have a note here that I made not only a year ago this month. In Edinburgh, Scotland, for example, someone, a prankster, got 1 year prison for putting a piece of bacon on a mosque door. 1 year in prison. Can you imagine if someone would have done that to Christianity, he would have gotten a prison? He wouldn't even been chided. But this is an example, again, to elevate a culture, in this case Islam, and make it at least equal, if not superior, to our culture. So in many ways, when they all say all cultures are equal, they're really denying it because they elevate these other cultures over above Christianity, and thereby they show that what they just said is not true.
So what's the relationship then between Western culture? You've written another book on this. It was at one time, I believe, titled Under the Influence. What's the relationship between Western culture and the general historic influence of Christianity in the Christian era that has rendered it, all of the things being equal, at least in human terms, a superior civilization?
Yes. The title is now Change, How Christianity Changed the World. In fact, I have some copies out there in front that some people have already purchased, and I autographed them. Yeah, the book, it deals with 15 different chapters where I highlight how Christianity has changed the world, and in every respect for the better. For example, slavery was really ultimately, or abolition of slavery was really prompted by Christianity. And I often feel very badly for our historians, including our theologians, who never really caught on to that. When I went to college and read about slavery, I always heard, for example, was Christians who brought about slavery. The very opposite is true. Have you ever read that one page chapter in the New Testament called Philemon? Well, right there, for example, you have an example of Onesimus, who escaped as a slave and then was captured and found back. And then Paul writes to Philemon and now tells him, no longer treat him as a slave, but as a Christian brother. There we laid, Christianity laid the foundation for the abolition of slavery. And I point out in that whole chapter of how Christians freed slavery by the hundreds, by the thousands, permitted them to be equal members, to be baptized, to come to the Lord's Supper at church. They didn't discriminate against them, so on and so forth. Now, I must also mention, there were also a few deviant Christians sometimes. Some of them were church leaders who had slaves, but they were really more the exception than the rule, and they were really not going along with the Christian value. Well, moving from slavery, for example, the freedom that Christianity gave to women. If you want to know what women had for freedom basically at the days of Jesus Christ, look at the average Muslim woman today on TV. Very similar. Christianity liberated the woman, for example, gave her freedom and dignity that they didn't have and they don't have in the Islamic religion. Now, by the way, for me to say this on the radio, on air radio, they would probably cut me off because multiculturalists don't like to hear that. I would be bigoted, not because what I'm saying isn't true, but because it is true. It would be bigoted if I made this up, but it isn't. All you have to do, and you'll see the difference. Well, I talk, for example, how Christianity brought about the change in education. The origin of universities happened in the Middle Ages and the monasteries, basically. How Christianity, for example, the early scientists were basically Christians. When they studied scientific problems, whether it was in chemistry or with astronomy, and I always like to mention, because if it's a Lutheran audience, Johann Kepler, who gave science the first three scientific laws. For example, that planets, when they orbit around the sun, the closer to the sun, the faster they move. The farther from the sun, the closer they move. Well, that's one of the laws. Another one is that they don't move in a perfect circle, but in an elliptic fashion. Most of you have probably read that even in the watered-down science books today. That is still true. And then there's a third law, a little more complicated. He gave signs, and what was Kepler? He was only 4 months shy of being ordained as a Lutheran pastor. And he was very gifted in mathematics, so they sent him to Graz, Austria, to teach in what we would call an upper high school level mathematics. And he never went back to the University of Tübingen, where he was a student studying for the Lutheran ministry. And he died as a faithful Christian. In fact, he said, he wrote his own epitaph that he had put on his tomb. I used to study the stars from below. Now I will study them from above, given reflecting his Christian faith. And I could go on. You probably would like to ask some other questions. But Christianity made an immense contribution in the realm of art and music, in economics, in justice, in law, which has basically been overlooked. And I'm glad to say people have published, the book is now in 7 foreign languages. So it just came out in Russia last fall in a hardcover. So some people apparently like to hear that Christianity is not what the multiculturalists portray it as.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. We're broadcasting live on this Friday afternoon, June the 19th, from the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois. When we come back, we're going to turn to the influence of multiculturalism on politics and government, on education, and finally, on the church. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We'll be right back.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/Luther Academy.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues, Etc. 300. Our Savior Lutheran, Westminster, Massachusetts. Redeemer Lutheran, Fairhope, Alabama. St. Matthew Lutheran, Stony Plain, Alberta, Canada. Holy Cross Lutheran, Moline, Illinois. St. Paul Lutheran, Munster, Indiana. St. John Lutheran, Racine, Wisconsin. Calvary Lutheran, Baltimore, Maryland. Reformation Lutheran, Afton, Missouri. Emmanuel Lutheran, Lima, Ohio. Risen Lord Lutheran, Taylorsville, Kentucky. Prince of Peace Lutheran, Crystal Lake, Illinois. And Trinity Lutheran, Elmore, Ohio. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues, Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes a congregational sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues, Etc. journal, the Issues, Etc. 300.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin, broadcasting live on this Friday afternoon from the Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois. We're kicking off the Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference with this broadcast at 6:30 tonight here at Good Shepherd. Pastor Chris Roseborough, Fighting for the Faith, is going to be holding forth on making the case against vision-casting leaders in the church, and I expect great things from Chris. He's been with us all 3 years of the Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference so far. Now, we topped out, we set our registration at 400, we made it to about 410, but we actually ordered meals for 425. So if you are in the area, you want to come by. If you come by tonight, pay $100, you can still be part of the Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference. If you come by tomorrow, $75, that's the rest of the conference for you. So there's still spaces for people walking in. It's 1300 Beltline Road in Collinsville, Illinois, Good Shepherd Lutheran Church. Come on over. And if too many come over, we'll just lock the door. Saturday, tomorrow, we're going to be hearing the case made for the church's response to postmodernism. Pastor Jonathan Fisk of Worldview Everlasting will be our guest. Molly Ziegler, Hemingway of the Federalist, will join us. She'll be making the case for the differences between men and women. Dr. Paul Meyer, who is our keynote for this year's conference, is going to be making the case for the historical Jesus. And after lunch, he'll be making the case for biblical archaeology. Dr. David Menton of Answers in Genesis and Washington University in St. Louis will make the case for creation. Pastor Will Whedon, Director of Worship for the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod, will make the case for a Lutheran approach to the church fathers. We're not done after dinner. There will be a church service where I'll be preaching, and then the now famous hymn sing with Pastor Will Whedon and Chris Lemker for those who want to stick around at 7 o'clock tomorrow night. So I encourage you to do that. But those of you who are sitting here in the audience obviously realize we're going to keep you very busy over the next 24 hours. We plan on doing it. We will not give you any time to breathe. I promise you that as well. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. We're talking about multiculturalism. He's Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College and author of the book, The Menace of Multiculturalism. Dr. Schmidt, you have been studying this for more than 20 years, since 1997 and before. Let's talk about some of the areas where it's had its influence, what's changed the most, beginning with government. How has multiculturalism influenced government in Western civilization?
Well, for one, it has influenced it in terms that we now have so-called hate crimes. That's a multiculturalist phenomenon or product, which is an absurd concept, really. But it's another example of trying to advance a leftist left-wing ideology that's contrary to basically Christian and moral values, in many cases even contrary to the natural law. It's influenced us, for example, that today it permeated the university campus so much so that the average university campus is nothing but a house of propaganda, a citadel of atheism, a citadel of multiculturalism, political correctness and the like. And most parents send children that are really quite unaware of what's going to happen to their children when they send them to schools like this. There are only a few colleges and universities in this country that have not bowed to multiculturalism. One is Hillsdale College in Michigan, as an example. But other than that, free speech, for example, universities used to be known where you could debate ideas because universities prided themselves, we're going to come to the truth. Those are all days gone by. In fact, that's an anathema. That's condemned. Because it again harks back to the fact that's a Western idea and therefore you don't adopt and accept it. So there is no debate anymore on campuses relative to, let's take the topic of homosexuality, or now it's in the media now, ad nauseum transgenderism. And guess what? I just saw a couple of days ago a research report. I have not read the entire aspect of it because I still don't have it. I'm in the process of getting it. That now the majority of the Christians who call themselves evangelical see nothing wrong with same-sex marriage. And by the way, that's a multicultural term rather than homosexual marriage. You see, again, we pick up their language unknowingly and thereby we unwittingly spread their propaganda. I have often told church audiences, and I'll tell you too, none of us should, if we're really consistent Christians, ever use the word gay. That's what they want you to use. Say homosexual, not gay. But you see, you hear it so often in the culture, before long we mimic it, we imitate it, and we don't even know that what we did, and we have only strengthened their ideology, their platform. And similar, for example, with other kinds of things. All religions are equal today, in spite of the fact that you don't have to do much studying to see that they are not. But again, if you, and how do we spread that? Well, we've spread that, for example, with the term of faith. The term faith today is a synonym for religion. Ouch, that's wrong, it's anti-biblical. You find never in the New Testament or in the Old, the word faith had one pointed reference, namely Christianity. Paul says, I have kept the fight. I have kept the faith. He's talking about Christianity. He's not talking about another religion. Or when Demas left Paul, he went to another faith. No, because faith had only one meaning. By the way, the Lord blesses me, I may write a book on that whole topic of the misuse of faith in our society, which we in the church unwittingly have bought into as well. And we've weakened our case, we've weakened our arguments, because we haven't done our homework. Because the word faith is not a synonym for religion. So now let me put it in plain language. Never should you as a Christian say the Muslim faith, the Mormon faith, the Hindu faith. The moment you've done that, you've put them on the same level with Christianity. Why? Because none of those religions have any historical foundation for what they teach. Only Christianity has that. And therefore, you should never begin to equate them. There is only one faith, namely the Christian faith. But that's an example of how multiculturalism has invaded, probably even beyond their expectation, in terms of spreading their propaganda by changing the language. It goes all the way back to Karl Marx. He used to say, if you want to change the structure, change the language, first of all. And that's exactly what multiculturalism has been doing by various concepts. We are not critical thinkers. And that's partly due to our education, but it's also partly due to the nature of human beings. We like to take the easy road, not only when we drive with a car, but also when it comes to thinking. I remember when I had a professor many years ago who said, thinking is hard work. He was right. I never forget that statement. It is indeed hard work. It's not what we call wishful thinking, but thinking, trying to sort out the facts and see the relationships and see the fallacies. That involves thinking. And, of course, multiculturalism has been very successful because a lot of people don't do a lot of thinking. A lot of people have never been told that they should think.
This is from Steve listening in Unionville, Michigan. He says, I appreciate your comments about Western society versus multiculturalism. Your points are well taken, The one that has been increasingly troubling is the point that while Judaism and Islam are protected, Christianity is fair game. I don't dispute that. There is a great deal of truth in that statement, but is it really a valid criticism in itself? Still today, Christianity is the majority religion in Western civilization. It's not the majority that legitimately, I might add, needs protection by society from minorities, but the reverse. Obviously, there's a lot about the attacks on Christianity that are unfair and unjustified, and there are more and more disturbing trends on the horizon. But we aren't doing a disservice by, but aren't we doing a disservice by complaining that we are being persecuted at this point in time? Steve, thanks for listening up there in Michigan. What do you say, Dr. Schmidt?
Well, we probably shouldn't complain, but we should fight back. And show what Christianity has done in spite of the people's and our culture's ignorance of it. Complaining usually doesn't get you anywhere because it really doesn't. But in order to fight back, you have to be prepared. You have to have done your homework. I often used to tell my students, even when I taught at the seminary in Fort Wayne, in order to defend Christianity, you have to do your homework. And you have to know what the enemy thinks. Unless you know that, you can't really fight back. And so I would say it's not so much that we as Christians should complain. That should perhaps be a motivation for us to, as I said, become active and counter the ideology that attacks Christianity. Because complaining ultimately is seen as whining. So I would agree with that aspect. But we need to really attack the issue at hand and, again, be informed. Know, for example, what Christianity is, has done, and also be able to back it up with some scriptural verification that is often, again, very sadly lacking. We really, as we all know, don't really read the Bible, or if we do, it's kind of skim read. And I will make another comment that probably will seem as critical. I've been saying it for some years as I get around and talk in various parts of the synod and in the country, and often sit in the pew. I have said again and again, our preaching today has increasingly become devotional, no longer didactic. It no longer teaches people right from wrong. That's hence I'm not surprised that they are capitulating to the culture on homosexual marriage. No, I didn't say same-sex marriage. You have to concentrate not to use their language. So I'm not surprised about that. We as Christians have a lot of homework to do if we want to, for example, fight back. Complaining again will not do it.
One of the things I always like talking to Dr. Schmidt, it's always an interesting conversation, but and I've said it before, I'll say it again, I'm always disappointed with your complete lack of conviction. I just have to wring things out of you. I have to get you to say something, try to draw some passion out of you. It's very disappointing.
I am very sorry.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. We're talking about multiculturalism. We're coming to you live from the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois. You can join us with questions or comments. Our call-in number 1-877-623-6943. Talk back at issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at issuesetc. And on the other side of the break, if you have a question or a comment, you need to go to the mic. We're going to do some limited questions and comments for our guests. Make sure it's on the topic, by the way, of multiculturalism. That's always good. 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, talkback at issuesetc.org, our Twitter address at issuesetc. When we come back, we're going to talk about the effect of multiculturalism on the church.
Seek out that clear teaching. That's why Issues Etc. is so great.
Pastor Jonathan Fisk, host of the video blog Worldview Everlasting, on the value of Issues Etc.
I can't speak highly enough of the times in my life, previous to seminary especially, where it was my lifeline. It was giving me the food that I needed, the clear thinking Christianity, to be able to know what I believed and why I believed it.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. Issues Etc. issuesetc.org.
Bethany Lutheran College is pleased to sponsor Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. Bethany Lutheran College is located in the picturesque river town of Mankato, Minnesota, and is committed to making Christian higher education affordable for all with generous financial aid packages available. At Bethany, you'll find stimulating academic programs, a friendly atmosphere, and opportunities to grow both in intellect and in your faith, all within the framework of a supportive Christian environment. For more information, visit us on the web at blc.edu.
Athanasius, Bishop of Alexandria in the 4th century, was known for boldly confessing Jesus Christ as both true God and true man. This is what we do at St. Athanasius Lutheran Church in Vienna, Virginia, just outside Washington, D.C., continuing this historic confession of our Savior, who died for us and now comes to us in word and sacrament. If you live in the D.C. area or just visiting, come join us. For more information, find us on the web, St. Athanasius Lutheran Church.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe that traditional Lutheran preaching, liturgy, and hymnody continue to deliver Christ crucified for sinners today. The Reformation attempted to return the Church's focus on what we do for God back to a focus on what God does for us, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures. Some things never change. The gospel is still under attack from inside and outside the church. To see how Lutheran doctrine and practice preserve the gospel, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Hollywood's attitude toward Christianity, the Bible's influence on the U.S. Constitution, the decline of biblical preaching, the connection between biblical illiteracy and Western morality. You'll find these essays and more in the new book, The Word They Still Shall Let Remain, The Place of the Holy Scriptures in the Faith and Life of Confessional Lutherans. Check it out at shop.logia.org. The Word They Still Shall Let Remain, shop.logia.org.
Those beautiful notes were just the beginning of We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God, Concordia Publishing House's debut CD collection from Pastor Stephen Starkey, one of the most significant Lutheran hymn writers of our time. For a limited time, save 10% when you use promotional code URA. Simply visit cph.org today. Lutheran thought, Lutheran substance, Lutheran music, brought to you by Concordia Publishing House.
Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. We're broadcasting live from the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference of Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois. We're talking about multiculturalism, and we invite everybody who's here in the audience to submit a question or a comment. We can't take everybody's question because there's too many of you, but if you have a question or a comment for Dr. Schmidt on multiculturalism, go ahead and approach the microphone, form a orderly line, and we'll get to you, as many of you as we can. Who are you? Where are you from? And what's your question?
I'm Tony DiMercurio from Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Dearborn, Michigan. And I was going to ask Dr. Schmidt if, in fact, the menace of multiculturalism has been refined to the point where it reaches down to the differences between doctrines within the Lutheran Church relevant to the different synods.
Good question. Thank you very much.
Whether it's been defined or refined, did you say?
Does it have its influence on the differences between Lutheran synods, Lutheran church bodies?
Multicultural.
I don't think it's done that, but it has invaded even our Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and even the Wisconsin Synod. In terms of, let me give you an example. Wisconsin Synod put out a new hymnal. It's probably 15, maybe about the time I wrote this book, I think, called Christian Worship. They took the Nicene Creed, for example, and instead of saying, was made man, it says, was made fully human. They would never have said that 20 years earlier before multiculturalism had come on the scene. I'm sure if I were to ask them, they would deny it. But that's another example of how culture is a silent social force that invades us unbeknown to what's going on and how we speak. And so, for example, you see now in hymns, a silent night, holy night, Son of God, now has become child of God. That's multiculturalism, political correctness coming to the fore. Or, for example, take the Mighty Fortress Is Our God. There's a stanza in there, for example, even in LSB. I like LSB for the most part. It's a much better hymnal than we had before. But there are two versions of Mighty Fortress. One of them has been influenced by multiculturalism when it says, you know, the old saying says, take they our life, goods, fame, child, and wife. The other version says, were they to take our house, goods, honor, child, or spouse? There you have multiculturalism again. The wife is out. That would be sexist. That's multicultural coming to the scene and trying to eliminate. And so our theologians are often caught up, not aware of the fact, as a little bit of a, what Todd said earlier, using the fish in the water. I often used to tell my students, if a fish could think, the last thing the fish would discover is water. Something similar with Todd said a moment. We in culture swim in culture, and we're not aware of it any more than the fish is aware of water. And hence it influences up the multiculturalists, and that's how they keep winning the argument, because we are not informed and we don't really fight back informatively.
Give us your name, tell us where you're from, what's your question?
Paul Orban, Milwaukee. Dr. Schmidt, I'm sure we could agree on a lot of examples of multiculturalism in colleges of education and liberal arts, social sciences, so-called. Maybe it's a contradiction in terms. But what about the hard sciences, so-called chemistry, physics? Are they a citadel against multiculturalism, or don't they care? Also, I don't know if you want to touch the effect of multiculturalism in Lutheran undergraduate education.
Well, first, your first question. No, the hard sciences are still not as captivated by multiculturalism as the humanities and the so-called behavioral sciences, but they too are being affected. Even in mathematics, when you have a word problem, they're going to make very sure that the word problem doesn't reveal anything favorable to sexism. And so that, in terms of the substantive problems, no, there it isn't at present. But it's invading those areas as well, and that's particularly in math and the word problems. And it's in doing this in the areas of physics likewise, too. So they're not completely free from it. Moreover, they live in an environment, they rub shoulders with the professors who teach in the humanities and the social sciences and so on and like. And they want to be liked. They want to be with them. They don't want to be seen as people who are defending the Western culture, which of course is not liked and is very much criticized. So in a sense, they are, if not conveying multiculturalism in word problems or similar things, they at least are quiet. And hence, they're not escaping it either. And I forget your other second question.
Lutheran colleges and universities, undergraduate work.
I've, of course, been away from teaching in Lutheran colleges, undergraduate work, but what I, for example, perceive in what I read, for example, it's very much multiculturalism is there alive. A few years ago, one of our famous, well-known colleges, for example, had a whole special issue on promoting multiculturalism, again revealing that they really didn't know what multiculturalism was about, and those have not disappeared. I don't want to necessarily, in fact, I can't give you real hard specifics today, but it wouldn't be hard for me to go back and show, for example, in the publications that they put out monthly or quarterly, that multiculturalism is definitely there. It's certainly not denied, and certainly they will not argue against it. That you will not find.
What's your name and where are you from?
My name is Emily Reinemann and I'm from North St. Paul Christ Lutheran Church. Well, I am actually a student at a Lutheran high school right now, and I have seen what you're talking about. I've definitely seen a lot of fight back against racism, sexism, almost to the point where it becomes a little much. And as you've told us to do our homework and fight back, I was wondering if you had any advice for me as a high school student and as a soon college student about how I can do that respectfully.
That's a very good question. Emily, thank you very much.
Well, first of all, you're going to have to try and read some good books and articles on that. And there are certain publications, aren't many of them. For instance, the Federalist, We'll have a person representing the Federalists here a little tomorrow, namely Molly Ziegler. They put out some good article. In fact, just this last week, they put out an 11-page article on the mass delusion that is happening in our society today relative to transgenderism. Tap in on those kinds of magazines. Get in touch with the National Association of National Association of Scholars, of which I'm a member. It's been in existence about 25 years now. They put out a journal called Questions, which has excellent articles critiquing multiculturalism that goes on in higher education, particularly in college levels. So those are just two off the top of my head that I can mention. And if you do your little homework, you'll find footnotes or references to other examples, or even if you will subscribe to it, it's free of charge. Imprimis, publication by Hillsdale College, puts out a monthly publication of speakers that they have, and most of them are very much opposed to multiculturalism.
Here's something I've noticed. We've talked about Islam a lot with you and with other guests, and the one thing that I have noticed, Dr. Schmidt, the question always keeps coming back around. Why does the United States have a foreign policy that seems to be rather impotent when it comes to not only international terrorism, but now governments and then kind of quasi-governments that are built around Islamic culture? And it finally occurred to me that really multiculturalism is running the day in our foreign policy. We can't really treat them as enemies of the state. That's an old-fashioned way of thinking about it, but it's a good way of defending yourself. We can't really treat them as enemies of the state because that would be impugning their culture. After all, they're just living out their culture. What are your thoughts there?
You put it very well. I really can't add much more to it. It's another example how they have been influenced and have absorbed and internalized the values of multiculturalism. And probably if you were to tell them that, they would probably deny it. But the proof in the pudding lies in the eating, so to speak, or what they do. And it's reflected definitely in our foreign policy, that you can't criticize them because you may step on their toes, and you don't want to do that. We want to be nice to them. At the same time, when we do that, we are weakening our own position and really undermining our whole reason for existence. Well, take, for example, free speech today. Who would have believed, even when I wrote my, well, I'd already hinted at it. I have a couple of pages in here in the book where I talk about free speech for me, but not for thee. And already saw it coming, for example, that the attack on the free speech or the First Amendment, as we call it in this country, would take place. And it's now, you know, the left, the political culture, the multiculturalists cannot tolerate an opposing point of view. They don't do their homework, and their homework is not based on facts. It's based on ideology. It's based on wishful thinking, so to speak. It doesn't have any scientific basis. That's the whole reason underlying transgenderism. Our media has gone ape, if I may use that term, in terms of promoting transgenderism. And here is a quick new contradiction. Try trans racism and see how well that flies. Now, if there's transgenderism, there ought to be trans racism. But that's a political, multicultural, politically taboo. You see, for example, the inconsistency in their arguments. Well, that's another thing they don't like. You know, they have a special term, I mentioned it in my book, for people who argue logically. It's called logocentrism. You're focused on logic. Well, what's the option? Well, they won't say it, but they want emotions. It's much of what's taught at school today in history is what I call feel-good history, to make certain ethnic groups feel good at the expense of the truth and at the expense of the students who are sitting there who, for the most part, aren't representative or offspring of the groups that are the history books try to make feel good. So you see the phenomenon is very widespread, and it spills over, obviously, into foreign policy for the same reason. They don't want to criticize them. They want to be seen as good boys or really saying, you're just as good, your culture is just as equal as ours.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. We're broadcasting live on this Friday afternoon, June the 19th, from the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois. 10 more minutes with him. Then Craig Parton will join us. We're going to talk about what a recovering evangelical is, and he will speak some from some personal experience in that respect. Our call-in number 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc.
Listen to chapel services live weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana at issuesetc.org.
And the love of God.
Morning Chapel from Kramer Chapel, live weekday mornings, 8:30 Central, 9:30 Eastern, 7:30 Mountain, and 6:30 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
There is confusion about marriage in the world, but not with Jesus and His Scriptures. Gottesdienst, the Journal of Lutheran Liturgy, will be having a conference on Tuesday, June 30th at St. Paul Lutheran Church, Hamel, Illinois, on marriages and weddings. Come and hear the theology of marriage and the theology of the wedding and be strengthened in confessing. Helpful sectionals for pastors and laity in the finest of the church's worship. For more information, go to gottesdienstonline.blogspot.com.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Has your pastor promised that Christianity will improve your marriage, produce well-behaved children, and make your life happier? And have you failed to see these results? Visit a confessional Lutheran church this weekend where they won't promise your best life now. They'll give you something better, Jesus, every Sunday. Find a Christ-centered, cross-focused church near you on the Find a Church page at issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about multiculturalism for another 10 minutes here on Issues Etc., broadcasting live from the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois. Dr. Schmidt, you talked a bit before about kind of the change of language, how pervasive multiculturalism's influence has been in just the simple words that we use. And those words obviously are not just, you know, empty vocables. They, in fact, are themselves agents of change in the way that we think. How we speak affects how we think and vice versa. What are some other examples of the language changes wrought by multiculturalism?
Yeah, they're pervasive. And most of the time we've already picked them up and weren't even aware. I talk about them in my book. Let me give you some examples. The physically handicapped, that's a bad word. You should say physically challenged today. Tall or short people is taboo. They're vertically challenged. Fat people is taboo. They're laterally challenged. Prostitutes are not prostitutes, they're sex workers. Bums and hobos are homeless people. You see, we don't talk about bums and hobos. There used to be books written on them. As a sociologist, I used to have to study those books back in the, written in the 20s and the 1930s. Illegitimate children are children of single mothers today. Sodomy is a word no longer heard or used, even in religious language. Hispanics are Latinos. Freshmen are first-year students on campus. Pets are, for example, animal companions. It goes on. For example, sexual perversion has now become sexual preference. Used to be sexual perversion, now it's sexual preference. You see what's going on? And we use the term, and we aren't even aware of how we've departed from the old accurate description and so on down the line. There are other, for example. Fur coats are despised by multiculturalism, you know, and often, as you know, acid has been thrown on and the like. There are other examples. Christopher Columbus is condemned because he supposedly discovered America in 1492. AIDS, for example, Do you know what AIDS initially was called? The multiculturalist change, it used to be called GRIDS. Gay-related immune deficiency. Whoa, that's against homosexuals, so we picked the word AIDS. Acquired immune deficiency. Huh. Did you know that a multicultural underlying? No, most people use the term and never knew what happened. But that's not how it started off when the disease was discovered. Is this just an example of how silent it is? It is perfectly acceptable to bash white males. It's perfectly acceptable, for example, not to be worried, for example, that down to about the... It used to be when I was teaching in college, 55 to 60% of the students in college and university were male. It's down now to the lower 40s. And it's another example that doesn't really disturb us because it fits into the multicultural way of thinking. Judeo-Christian values were very much today despised. You, for example, you may burn the American flag. But for heaven's sake, if you burn, for example, a symbol of Islam, you would undoubtedly be accused of a hate crime and most likely convicted. So it's pervaded all. American Indians today are Native Americans. Well, I thought that everybody born here was a Native American. Yeah, you were. Or the term, for example, African American is such an Unding, as we would say in German. It's... Am I a European American? Well, if there is an African American, then I'm a European American. It's just absolute nonsense. Yet the media have picked it up. And by the way, it took place in the late 1978, to be example. Same way with the word Hispanic. A bureaucrat in Washington one day decided, I'm going to say Hispanic. And before long, it became the usus loquendi, they would say in Latin, the language of the common people or commonly used. And I could go on. You may have another question. It's perfectly multiculturally compatible for boys to play with dolls. And you see, increasingly, if you go into a Sears store or anywhere else, hammers and saws and whatnot, with a girl there holding it. In other words, it's really as much for her as it is for a boy. We have tried to deny the difference between male and female. And referring, for example, to the Federalist, there was another article that appeared this week quite well. By the way, you can read that online. And a woman wrote, she says, what's his name, Bruce Jenner, can never be a woman. And she became very graphic in describing of how she became a woman, and particularly when she first had her menstrual cycle. And she said, he will never have one. Hence, he's not a woman. But that's the kind of language multiculturalists do not like, because it undercuts their whole value. See, they're not, multicultural doesn't base its argument on facts. It bases its arguments on emotions. And that really has a 200-year history back, if I may say. Our remote references to Aristotle, the Greek, already talked about. And you see, underneath it lies the value of relativism. If everything is relative, then there is no absolute. However, in multiculturalism, there is one thing that's not relative, namely the politically correctness is an absolute. If you're politically incorrect, then you have violated the political correctness absolute. But it also goes back to a German philosopher by the name of Immanuel Kant, who died in 1804, who, for example, says truth lies within the subject, not outside of the subject. So whatever you see as truth is truth, not what's out there in reality. Hence, there's no room for God. That's something that is not corresponds to the person's subjective thinking. See, and all of this underlies multiculturalism, and it was fostered in our schools by the argument of everything is relative. But let me say one more thing about
that. And you have 1 minute to do it, less than 1 minute.
I will do it in less than that. If everything is relative, so is that statement. Then you have self-refuted yourself. But because we're not given to critical thinking, we don't get that point. I did it before a minute.
Thank you. Made my job easier. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College. He's author of the book, The Menace of Multiculturalism. Dr. Schmidt, thank you very much for being our guest.
My pleasure.
When we come back, Craig Parton's going to join us. He gets I wouldn't call Craig Parton a recovering evangelical. I think he's probably recovered by now, at least from the conversations I've had with him. He's a regular guest on the program, a trial attorney in Santa Barbara, California. But he did spend 7 years as a speaker for Campus Crusade for Christ, right there in the beating heart of old evangelicalism. We're going to talk about recovering evangelicals, what they are, who they are, and why they are so interested often in kind of leapfrogging over the Lutheran confession to Rome or to orthodoxy or even to atheism. We'll cover all of that with Craig Parton when we come back. We're broadcasting live from the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference right here in Collinsville, Illinois at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church. It's Friday afternoon, June the 19th. There is still room. We have ordered 425 meals and have about 410 who have showed up, so there's still room. If you'd like to come over tonight, it's $100 to join the conference. Tomorrow during the all-day conference, because you're missing a meal there, it'll be $75. So come out. It's 1300 Beltline Road in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Hour 2 of Issues Etc. in 5 minutes.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
In a world awash with all sorts of information, opinions, and ideas, there is still a place where God's Word is the central and only focus. Messiah Lutheran Church, 801 North Madison, Lebanon, Illinois. At 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings, God's people gather there to listen to Him. There you will find His words of law and gospel, and of course, our Lord's Holy Supper. Bible classes focus on the Bible and the Lutheran confessions. Come, listen, believe, and live, and check out our website at messiahlebanon.org.
The substitute organist service has been a great blessing for our worship life here at Christ the King Lutheran in Riverview, Florida.
Pastor Kevin Yoakum on the substitute organist service.
Now our organ plays rich liturgical music every single Sunday, and it's very affordable. You pick the hymns, you pick the liturgies. It's very simple. Just know when to push play.
You can find out more about the substitute organist service at churchmusicsolutions.com. churchmusicsolutions.com.